Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. Now, Craig, feel like we have to start off with the Fed meeting and statement yesterday, the 75 basis point hike that is, I believe, the largest hike since the mid-90s. And again, that followed up that 50 basis point hike, and the Fed continuing to say that they will keep hiking with that focus on inflation to bring down inflation. This is impacting the markets pretty much across the board as, well, there's just less liquidity out there and there is drastically less free money in the system, a key factor that has driven markets and, I guess you could argue, the economy higher. But, Craig, your takeaway from that 75 basis point hike and the outlook that the Fed is going to keep on hiking.
Well, a couple of things come to mind, Corey. I was a stockbroker in 1994, and I remember those rate hikes, and they just crushed the emerging markets. Mexico, I think, had to be bailed out by the IMF at that time. So, again, this stuff has global ramifications. We're seeing what's going on, you know, in Japan with the Bank of Japan trying to protect their yield curve control. The euro is trending toward parity with the dollar because they're trapped trying to support all the, you know, the sovereign debt of the pigs, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. So there are impacts all over the place. And I really am left with the feeling that the Fed is just kind of flying by the seats of their pants. And I mean, they make it sound like, oh, yes, well, we have this is all part of a plan that we've had. Really? I mean, a year ago, there weren't going to be any rate hikes until 2023. You know, even just a few months ago, the Fed funds was pegged at maybe 1.7 or something like that by the end of the year. Now they're talking 3.4. Yesterday, they went from expecting 50 basis points last week to two weeks ago. You had Bullard and Bostic both out there saying, yeah, we're going to do 50, then we're going to do 50 more, then we're going to quit. Until now, all of a sudden, it's 75 because of the CPI last week. I think they're just making it up as they go. And actually, the dollar has sold off and gold has rallied ever since about 5 minutes into Powell's press conference yesterday when he actually said, I heard him say it, and this got picked up by a few people on Twitter, that this is not a plan, that no one can say for certain where things are going to be a year from now and that things are going to have to be adjusted accordingly. Well, no kidding. And that just, like, the dollar fell 40 cents inside of 1 minute when he said that. That's when gold took off from 1830 to 1840 and it's continued today. I guess my problem with all of this in the end, I referenced earlier about how long I've been following this stuff. I remember, man, when the only time you ever heard from the Fed was when Alan Greenspan had dragged his sorry old ass up to Capitol Hill for Humphrey Hawkins' testimony every 6 months. And CNBC would be there with their cameras across the street as he'd get out of his limo, and they'd all be talking about the size of his briefcase, you know, and everybody had to figure out, could he sit there and mumble like this and talk like, and nobody, and he'd talk in circles, and people would try to figure out what the hell it was he just said, and then they figure out, oh, we'll see you again in 6 months. Now, I mean, what, tomorrow you're going to get probably Bullard, Evans, Kashkari, Daly, Mester. I mean, if there's an open mic, these Fed goons are going to grab it. And they're treated as if they're masters of the universe, as if they have some idea what they're doing when they're all just these academics that never had, most of them never even had a job outside of the Fed. But yet they walk on waters. Oh, come save us. Hosanna. You know, and they're more apt to be wrong than right, just like the whole transitory stuff. So anyway, I'm sorry. Rant off. You asked me what I thought of the 75 basis points. So I guess that's what I think.
Well, Craig, I think it's an interesting point you made about how often the Fed now message to the media and to the markets compared to what they did in yesteryear, but also how often their messaging has had to be flip-flopped in actual policy. And you'd made a point to us off mic that all that really matters is what's going on right now. And I think that's an interesting point maybe to expand on, because if they do hit their academic target of getting to 3-4% Fed funds rate, the question is, what happens to everyday people? What happens to not just investors, but what happens to the economy? What do you think would happen if they stay on the course and actually took the Fed funds rates up to that point?
Well, again, they're trying to control inflation, you know, so they're looking out for the little guy, right? Are they? I mean, first of all, the little guy, what I've seen polls, 65% of Americans don't even have 1 month's worth of expenses in their savings account. 90% of the stock market wealth held in 10% of the people's hands, right? So they're raising rates, trying to induce this reverse wealth effect. That's what Bill Dudley called it in April when he said the Fed's goal was to inflict losses on bond and stock investors. That's his quote, not mine, from April the 7th of this year. And so they're out there inflicting losses. So now mortgage rates are over 6%. The housing market has come to a screeching halt. The only asset that people thought they had that they're feeling good about, maybe if they're lucky to own a house, is now coming down in value. If you do own stocks, that's down 20% year to date. How are they helping in the meantime? Now, I understand. You know, they could say, well, you know, we got to do something. You know, we can't just let inflation get worse. Well, hell, you started us down this road 13 years ago by monetizing everything. You didn't have to do that. But they did. You know, I had to save the banks with TARP and everything else that's happened since. You know, QE was supposed to be a one-off in March of 2009. Oh, no, we're not monetizing the debt, said Bernanke. No, 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 we'll never do this again. Then here came QE2 and QE3, and then, you know, everything's come since. I mean, look, the ECB can't even stop. They are now the sole bid for sovereign debt of Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. If they step away, the EU implodes. The Bank of Japan can't stop. They're trying to defend 25 basis point yield curve control. That's why the yen is going in the toilet. And then they're selling treasuries. And so there's now nobody buying treasuries and rates are skyrocketing. It's an absolute mess. And yeah, get rid of inflation. Yeah, nobody wants that. I mean, that's just crushing everybody. But at what cost going forward? That's where we're going to have to pay the piper.
Now, when you say what cost, I believe you're looking just even outside of the markets. We focus a lot on the markets, but quite frankly, the consumer continues to get bogged down with higher prices across the board and their wages not keeping up. But how do you balance out the market commentary with the economic commentary? Because the two have moved in different directions at some times.
Well, I mean, on my site, I have to help the people that are part of my site. They're the ones that are interested in help each other through this storm. And so that's market commentary. And, you know, that you get market commentary by the financial press and all that kind of stuff. But I just, the bigger picture needs to be paid more attention to. You know, U.S. consumer revolving debt, credit cards, home equity loans, you know what, you name it, is high as it's ever been, while the savings rate is about the lowest it's ever been. And so people are stretched as thin as they possibly can. The median U.S. income is only $44,000 a year, but yet they're trying to pay $5 gasoline just to take their kids to school, and food costs are through the roof. I mean, and now we're talking about people losing their jobs eventually because, well, corporations are getting squeezed. Their margins are getting squeezed by input costs, so they got to cut things someplace. Well, there's an abundance of jobs out there. Haven't you seen the JOLTS report? Okay, well, we'll see about that. We've also got people that are going to get laid off in the construction industry, things like that. As you know, housing starts day to day is terrible. So, I mean, this is a really nasty storm. And the people that are going to be most negatively impacted are the ones that got the least benefit from 13 years of quantitative easing. And that's the part, that societal part, is the thing that needs to be, I don't know how it gets addressed, but it's something we need to be worried about because, you know, even the Bolsheviks knew that. China, communist Chinese know that. Hungry people are dangerous people. And boy, you just wonder where, again, how bad this gets before it gets any better.
Well, Craig, it seems like you kind of laid out with the job situation and companies potentially having their revenues pinched to the point where they got to lay people off or right-size some of their staff. We finally have that last digit of the lock dialed in for stagflation. We've got the high inflation. We've got stagnant or slowing economy and GDP growth. We've got those super high energy prices that are just a tax on everything, and not just for the consumers, but also for businesses. And now the potential of layoffs. But stagflation doesn't usually stay around. It usually morphs into something else. So where do you think we go after this stagflationary period? Do we go into a recession, depression? Is there a rally? Is there a sugar high reopening? Where do we go after the stagflation?
Well, you know, I would turn this back to interest rates, Shad, for a second, because yeah, I've said forever, you know, that the Fed can't afford to let interest rates rise for, I mean, the obvious reasons for what it does to consumer debt, all the public and private debt everywhere, right? And I think that's obvious. And I think the Fed, well, they have to know that, right? I mean, we can't all, you know, the average maturity of the U.S. debt is like under 4 years now at an average coupon of under 2%, you know. And so if rates stay high for 3 or 4 years and it all starts resetting at higher levels, I mean, that's just a that's a great Ponzi disaster. And so I think the Fed has to know that. And I think they think that they have it under control. And that, you know, look how we have all this credibility. We've jawboned about this for 6 months and look what's happened to the bond market. And I think they think if we get into recession and inflation goes away, that buyers are going to return for U.S. debt. And I don't know. Will they? Like I mentioned, the Japanese net last month were net sellers of like $70 billion worth of treasuries because they're trying to raise cash to defend, you know, their own problems with their yield curve control. And I'll take you back one more. The weekend of the very first weekend of March, on March the 4th, Friday, the March the 4th, 10-year treasury note closed at 174. It has since doubled 100 days later. What happened that weekend? That was the weekend that the U.S. kicked Russia out of SWIFT and seized $400 billion of their offshore foreign currency reserves. What if there's now a buyer strike? What if that really did change things? And people figured out, holy crap, I don't want to hold treasuries because if I get sideways with the U.S., they'll just seize them. And now rates have doubled. Now I know, you know, inflation, you know, and blah, 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 blah. But what if the Fed can't get rates back down? What if they've unleashed it? Maybe there's been a paradigm shift. And what if what if the 40-year bond bull market is in fact over? How's that going to work? But again, you know, hey, oh, don't worry. Jay Powell, Leo Brainard, they're the smartest people on the planet. They're the master of the universe. They got this under control. What if they don't? I mean, these are all things that everybody needs to be asking themselves.
Well, that's a good question. And what if the market dynamic has changed, right? Because it seems like everybody was forced into stocks because there were no yields to be had. Now with yields moving higher, what if yields do continue to move higher? To your point, maybe there are no buyers out there, but wouldn't it eventually become attractive for some people to park some cash in higher yielding assets?
like the $2.2 trillion in overnight repo? Yeah, of course, Corey. Yeah, I hear you. But go back to that for a second. Think of over the last however many years you want to go, how many pension funds, public and private, insurance companies, foundations, endowments, whatever, have been driven into all these risky assets, whether they're stocks or high yield bonds. Have you seen the high yield bond market in the last 90 days? Oh my gosh. So they've created a building worsening crisis. And I guess what I'm getting at is what I mentioned regarding the ECB. The ECB should, I mean, no central bank should be the buyer of last resort for anything. That's not their job. Powell would even say that.
Well, we have this dual mandate of 2% inflation and full employment.
Fine. Their stated mandate is not to be the buyer of last resort for sovereign debt. But that's what the ECB is now. If they were to step away and start, you know, just cut off everything, those bond markets in Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain would absolutely implode and they'd have a whole nother crisis. And what do? They'd have to just ramp up even faster than they've ever ramped before. And the same thing is coming for the Fed. Because if they think, I mean, again, they can't afford rates to go higher. And so at some point, they're going to hope to get rates back down and they're going to hope that money comes flowing in. Where's it going to come from at this point without them? And so why has every subsequent QE program gotten larger from $600 billion or whatever it was, QE1 to whatever this last one was, a couple trillion by the time they were done? It's because every time they stop, they fall farther and farther behind that curve. And so the next QE program is going to have to be $3 trillion to get rates back down because they're going to be the only buyer. Or the only buyer of size. And anyway, that's how this all turns back to gold and silver. Because when it all turns again and the curtain gets pulled back and everybody realizes the Fed's full of crap and they are doomed and they're pinning themselves in the corner, there's no way out but to keep printing even faster, we're going to get another huge run. The last time we had this, coming out of the Powell pivot number one in 2018 and 19, gold went from about 1,200 up to 1,550 in about 8-9 months. What's that? 30%? Or you could look at when QE to infinity was started, that's what we just call it now, I guess, after COVID, gold went from 1480 to 2080. That's 40% in about 5 months. So when they are forced to change again, and that may be coming sooner than later, who knows what will eventually drive it. Probably going to be another pretty good rally in the metals. And so as it relates back to what you guys are worried about, what I worry about, that's why I just keep buying more. I haven't sold a single mining share. I'm getting my ass kicked, but they're going to turn. Just like, you know, GDX went from 18 to 30 in 2019. It went from, I'm trying to remember what it went from. It went from 18 to 46 or something in 2020. I don't want to end up chasing, so I just riding the storm out, because when it all turns again, it's going to be something to see.
Well, Craig, maybe just one more question on this. And I've asked this to other people, but I don't think I've ever asked you this before. With the bond market maybe having topped after a 40-year great run, four decades of bonds to the moon, and if that bubble has popped and we keep seeing rates go higher, the narrative has been that, hey, you know, if rates are going to go higher, that's bad for gold because gold doesn't pay anything. But when you look at it in context with inflation, you look at real rates, they're still vastly negative, almost negative, you know, 6%, negative 7%, depending on which metrics you're using for inflation and which treasury you're using. So at one point, if the generalist investor wakes up to this and says, you know what, I don't want to hold bonds anymore, do you think that could be where some of the fuel comes from? Is bond buyers rotating into the precious metals? And is that what could push them to that next level higher?
Yeah, I guess, Shad, I remember talking to Rick Rule about this a couple years ago, because that's always what he's thought, that at some point, you know, the cornerstone kind of foundational global investment is the 10-year treasury note. I mean, it's everywhere. And it's collateral for everything institutionally, you know, and at the sovereign level. And if the demand for that lessens, well, that's going to go look for something else. And yeah, that's what he has always said. That could very easily kind of flip back to gold. But there's a lot of other reasons why you would flip back to gold as well. And I just, again, you look at it, and if inflation, maybe they can somehow get it, you know, to come down some. But, you know, even if it comes down to 4 or 5%, who in their right mind wants to buy a treasury at 3 or 2 for that matter? And so, again, that falls back on being the Fed being the buyer of last resort. And they've played these games before, quantitative tightening and Operation Twist and all these kind of things. And look what happens. As soon as the economy tanks or the stock market tanks, here they come right back with an even bigger and better QE. The same thing is going to happen again, because they'll have to. And that's the moment that all of us precious metals investors will be waiting for.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, even the market investors, are waiting for that, because when the Fed does switch, we've also seen the markets bounce back. Who knows if that'll change? But even to your point, Craig, after that COVID washout, gold did go up. S&P went up more than 100% just in about 2 years. So again, that switch by the Fed, it can help all asset classes. It would just be nice if gold started from a higher level, which it has been holding up quite nicely. Craig, thank you as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat again next week, probably the following week too. So yeah, keep your head up, keep sending us all your information, and we'll chat again soon. So have a great rest of your week there, Craig.
You too, boys.